Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Hey, what's up, everyone, and happy new year. It is a new year, a new season here in the brand new Think Orange bunker. We are surrounded by confetti and those little horn blowers, and I think I've seen my producer, Kevin, just moving quietly underneath. Are you all right, Kevin? Are you with us today?
I am fantastic. I'm just taking it in.
Did you have a good New Year's Eve, Kevin?
New Year's is one of my favorite times of the year.
Oh, really? Why?
I love fresh starts. I love the renewal of a brand new day, a new week, a new month, and a new year. So I am currently in a season of reflection and gratitude, but a lot of hope and optimism for what's ahead.
Wow, it sounds like you are in a season of reflection, considering the tone of voice that you've taken.
Yeah, I do. I sound very zen.
Did you have a very late night?
You know what? I am still a father of a little girl who's not even 2 years old yet, so I was in the bed a little bit earlier than I would probably like to admit.
Well, you know what you should learn how to do this year? Increase your capacity as a leader.
Come on.
That's what you want to be doing, right?
High capacity.
And that's what we're talking about today, Kevin. The coincidence of the fact that you just said that and this episode being titled Increasing Your Capacity as a Leader. That's what we're going to be talking about today to kick off the brand new year. We're going to be hearing from two really high capacity leaders. The first one is Reggie Joyner, the founder and CEO of Orange. He's going to be talking about strategy and alignment, and he's going to be telling this great story about how he had a midlife crisis and bought himself a motorcycle. You're going to love hearing that one. And then we're going to hear from Kerry Newhoff. Kerry is the founding and teaching pastor of Connexus Church in Canada. He's also an author, a speaker, a blogger, a podcaster. He's one of the best dressed men that I personally know, apart from you, Kevin.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Your shoe game is on point.
Oh, not like yours. Now that's true. Anyone who knows Dave, you're like, man, that Australian knows how to pick some shoes.
Well, Kerry is going to be talking about some strategies that you can implement as soon as today to help kick off your 2018 and make it a little bit more strategic and a little bit more aligned to achieving the goals that you want to achieve in the coming 12 months. Now, today's episode is actually brought to you by the High Impact Leader, which is a new 10-session online course by the one and only the man himself, Kerry Newhoff, that will teach you practical, proven strategies to get time, energy, and priorities working in your favor. Now, Kevin, I know you've had a lot to do with Kerry Newhoff. This is not just something like that he writes about. The man lives this stuff.
Very, very true. Actually, that's one of the few reasons why I myself worked to start implementing those practices, because I saw how it gave Kerry the ability to spend time with his wife, with his kids, with his team, and still push forward on some of the initiatives that really give him energy. And I wanted to model some of that. And I can say after even just a year of spending time with those principles, they have made a gigantic impact in my life. And I'll save that for the end of the podcast when we talk about it some more, but it is true.
Yeah, I completely agree. I see it so clearly in him and in you. If you're like most leaders, you probably struggle to find time to get everything done. Well, Kerry Newhoff, he is effective and he is efficient. And so we hope that today's episode will help you have greater impact at work and get your life back on track. All you need to do is visit thehighimpactleader.com to learn how you can develop a personalized plan for productivity so you can accomplish the things you know are most important but rarely have the time for. Kevin, this is the sort of thing you would love to have, right?
Indeed. I actually recommend it to anybody who I know. I mean, I actually just recommended this to three business leaders that are completely outside of the church context. Mm. I said, if you're looking for something quick, simple, and easy, but has all of the tips that you wish someone told you about, if you've been saying, I don't understand why that person gets it all done, I guarantee there are at least three of the principles that Kerry talks about that they are actively using to gain the capacity they have to be effective. Guarantee it.
And I know he's got a book out on being a high impact leader, which I have had a look at. I haven't read it and I haven't had a look at this course yet, but I just see in Kerry's life, he has achieved so much. He is so aligned. He is so strategic. I know that you are going to get something out of this, no matter what level on the leadership org chart you might be. This is such great stuff. So make sure you go and check that out. Well, as I said, today we're going to be hearing from Kerry a little bit later on, but first we're going to hear from Reggie Joyner. He's got a really good message that starts with a motorcycle story that he had when he got himself a motorcycle and what that taught him about leadership. So check this out.
Today we start off with the idea of strategy. Now, the best illustration I can think of to kind of get us moving in a direction today is, I guess, about 15 years ago when men first started carrying smaller leather briefcases that we were accused of carrying purses, but they weren't purses. They were mini briefcases. Some of you know what I'm talking about. And to be hip and cool, and I was carrying one. And I remember at the time, you know, my son was about 17, and my daughter was about 16, and they told me they needed to eat dinner with me because they were kind of concerned. And so I remember I went to dinner and sat down, and it was kind of like an intervention, you know. And so Reggie Paul looked at me and he started the conversation. He said, "Dad, we're concerned about you because you're one of the few men that we know that drive a station wagon and carry a purse." And so, you know, I was wise enough at the time to know when I was being manipulated by your teenage children. And because I knew what the real problem was, they both had a driver's license and they did not want to drive the wagon. They wanted to drive something cooler. And so I did what any wise 40-something year old father would do at the time. I went out and I bought a motorcycle. And it was this interesting thing because I had not driven a motorcycle for several years. I actually had not driven one since my college years, so about 22 decades had passed. And my dad delivers this 600-pound motorcycle out onto the parking lot at North Point, and they let me keep it in the little shed in the garage that we had there on the parking lot. And after hours, when everyone would leave, and I was sure there was no one in the building, and I would pull that motorcycle out, and I would try to navigate it around the parking lot to get a feel for it. And I wasn't doing too great. And what I didn't know is that there were staff members and family members of mine that were hiding in the building and watching me. And so about, I don't know, probably, you know, 3 months into trying to learn how to ride this thing, my staff and my family called me to dinner one night and they sat around and said, "Listen, we've been watching you. You didn't know that. But we don't want you to take it out on the road because we don't trust that. So we've got you motorcycle lessons." And so I got motorcycle lessons up in North Georgia. I showed up with a motorcycle. Dad trailered it over there for me. And the first thing I noticed was they had these orange cones set up like an obstacle. And it was just this interesting pattern. And my job was to see how well I could drive it so that the instructor could assess for me exactly, you know, what my skill level was. And so then he could pick me up from there and start trying to train me. And so the job is really simple. I just need you to navigate the motorcycle around the cones to the end. And so, you know, I started doing what I think anybody intuitively would do who would drive any kind of vehicle. I looked at the first cone to make sure I could get around it, and I was going around it. You know, when I cleared it, and I knew I had cleared it, I looked around to see where the next cone was. And as soon as I had cleared that one, you know, I looked around to see where the next one was. And the further I got into the cones, because I was watching the cone I just passed, I recognized I was getting further and further away from each one of the cones. By the time I would get to about the third or fourth cone, I would just plow right into the cone and knock it over and have to start over. I did that about 3 times. And then finally, the instructor said, "No, I want to change the strategy for just a second. What I want you to do is I'm going to stand at the end this time. And what I would like for you to do is instead of looking at the cones that you're trying to clear, each one of the individual pieces, I want you to stay focused on me. Resist the temptation to get hyper-focused on any one of the cones and make sure you keep looking straight at me and see how that works for you." And it was kind of this amazing phenomena that I could actually keep my eyes on him and with my peripheral vision see everything else in the context of where I was going. And it changed the way I drove a motorcycle. Now, I don't know about you, but I started in a ministry, you know, when I was about 19 or 20, and I was jumping right into what I was doing. And I did not really have a plan when I jumped into it. And somewhere along the way, I think here's what my ministry would look like. I would do this program or this event. I would come up with this initiative and I would do it. When I was done with that, I would look around for what's next, what I could do. And I would grab that one and I would do that one. And somewhere along the way, I kind of had this ADD random approach to ministry. Well, here's what I discovered about 5 or 6 years into doing ministry. And see if this resonates with you. That it's not really your vision that determines your success. Most of us in this room, if we really pushed at it and we shared with each other the vision statements of our churches, I bet the words may be different, but I guarantee that the mission or the vision statement that most of us have is very similar. And I guarantee you that for the most part, it somewhere lines up with the Great Commission, because we're in the business of making disciples, leading people into growing relationship with Jesus Christ, turning irreligious people into followers of Jesus. Whichever way you say it, it's the same thing. But what I'm going to suggest today is that it's not your vision that will determine your success. It's your strategy. It's what you do with your resources and your people and your money and your buildings and your facilities and your staff. It's how you align those things to accomplish something with an end in mind that will determine whether or not you're successful. There are a lot of great organizations that have incredible missions, but there are a lot of great organizations that close their doors not because they didn't have a great mission, but because they didn't have a great strategy. We define strategy this way for those who work with the next generation. It's really simple. A strategy is a plan of action with an end in mind. So you determine what an end in mind is, and then you back up and go, okay, how are we going to use the resources and the things that we do to accomplish that end in mind? But without the end in mind, these are just random. Imagine this. Imagine if we took these orange cones and went out into the parking lot and just randomly dropped them in different places. Besides creating some confusion, maybe a couple of wrecks, would they really lead anybody in a direction? No. But you can take a simple object, a simple resource, a simple staff, a simple program, and put it in the right place and line it up in the right direction, and you can accomplish some amazing things. And part of the reason that we absolutely love for you to be here like this with the staff that's going to be working with the next generation, because we believe in alignment. I will tell the staff 1,000 times that work with the next generation, you know what? The most important thing isn't that you take an idea from here and you go do it. The most important thing is that you work as a team and you stayed aligned with your staff and with your team when you get back home, because somewhere along the way, it's the alignment that will make the difference in whether we accomplish some of the things that we need to accomplish. And here's what we love to talk to young leaders about. You don't have to work at getting misaligned as a team. You just don't. You don't have to work at getting misaligned in your marriage. You don't have to work at getting the tires on your car misaligned. That's just what happens with time. It's what happens with wear and tear. It's what happens with personalities. What you have to be intentional about, what you have to work at, is alignment. And it starts off by going, okay, what is the end in mind? And for us, it's real simple. You know, we ask two questions. We ask two questions all the time to determine the end in mind. As we work through curriculums and content, as we're working with the different age groups, first question we ask is, what do we want someone to become? At the end of the day, we've got to know what the answer to that is. For us, we kind of define that in the Great Commandment. So the people who walk away from our ministries, walk away from the age groups, are pursuing a right relationship with God. They love God. They're pursuing a right relationship with themselves because they see themselves in the light of who God is, and they're pursuing a right relationship with others. Those three things are kind of our overarching goal. We want kids to become that before they walk away. And it's important to ask and answer that question. What do you want them to become? So then you can back up, right? And line up what you're teaching, line up all your content, line up everything you're doing to accomplish that end in mind. The other question we love to ask and answer is this one. Where do we want them to be? This is a very practical, physical, you know, tangible question that you answer. In other words, I would ask it another way. If you could only get the people who come to your church, the preschoolers, the elementary age, the adults, if you could only get them to come to one thing, and that's the only thing they would come to, what would that one thing be? Where is the one environment that is the most optimal environment for them to experience life change? Now, in the context of the worlds we've worked with, especially with children and kids, and in the North Point model, we've always said that's the context of a small group relationship. We want them to be there. So guess what? When you decide that, then you back up and decide that every event, every time you get a chance on the platform, every time you get a chance to stand up in front of the masses to say anything at all, you're asking yourself the question, how can we leverage that as a step to get them to a group context where they can experience real community, where we feel like life change is optimal and they'll have a better chance of understanding how to develop an authentic faith. Now again, you don't have to have those answers. You got to decide, what do you want them to become? Where do you want them to be? And how are we going to line them up to make sure that we're moving everyone in the same direction to get to the same end? That's the reason we love doing this. We love doing this because for us, when we can get everybody in the room on the same page, moving in the same direction, we feel like we can accomplish things that we could never accomplish any other way. You know, and the one little thing that I would add to this, in my experience with staff members, working around the country with different leaders in different churches, is that when you're thinking in terms of strategy, the one most practical thing you can do is to make sure that you get in a room and you talk about it and you rearrange the pieces. You can't get your team on the same page if you never get them in the same room. And if I ever have an opportunity to meet with senior pastors and lead pastors and say one thing about their staff, I always love to say this. They need to know they're moving in a direction that you're leading for the organization and in a direction that where everyone is on the same page. And I can't count the number of staff members who will say from year to year to year, hey, I just want to make sure this is something that works in line with what my pastor's vision is and where I want my pastor to go. I just wish my pastor would spend some strategic time talking about these issues. Here's what I promise you is true. If you don't economize on the time once a month, once every other week, where you can put your team around the table and focus on what it means to have the right end in mind and what it means to be where you need to be, if you won't economize on that, you'll create a different kind of momentum in your organization, because something magical happens when all of your leaders, from preschool to children to middle school to adults to small groups to worship, when you're all moving in the same direction, something magical happens.
Well, that was such an insightful message from Reggie. I really love that idea. I want to bring Kevin in on this because I want to bounce this off. Kevin, that whole idea that he said misalignment naturally happens. You don't have to work at misalignment. Man, like when he said it, it was one of those, that's so obvious. But I've never had somebody point that out. You know what I mean?
I mean, the first thing I think about is me and my wife. You know, like, I mean, you got married because you shared similar goals, dreams, values. And if you think about the amount of times you and your wife might be misaligned on the smallest of things. So, yeah. So we're not talking about big things here, even just the smallest of things. You're like, and I live with you.
Yeah.
I see you every day. And we're going to talk for at least 20, 30 minutes every single day.
Yeah.
And I can still say, if I'm not careful, yeah, Leah and I are not on the same page.
Yeah, which totally.
And if it's my spouse, if you take it to the workplace, you know your team, it's easy for them to not know what you're thinking.
Totally agree. So, and it's not like I wake up in the morning going, I wonder how I can misalign with Meg tonight, right?
And
it's
totally right, totally.
It's always like, it just happens naturally. It's just miscommunication. It's misunderstanding.
Assumptions.
It's assumptions. And if that can happen in a marriage, then it can happen in a church team. And not only can it happen, it does.
Absolutely. I mean, and the last thing I would even say is, like, you know, a lot of it is you saying, well, I thought we discussed this before,
yeah,
right? So once again, we're not talking to, you know, anyone who's listening to this podcast. I mean, obviously we're using the context of marriage for this particular analogy, but the reality of it is, it's just so easy.
Yeah. How many church team or staff conversations start with, well, I'm pretty sure we talked about this, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that was great. It's great to have that as a concept. It's great to understand that as a principle. But here's the next step. What do we do with that principle? What do we do with that ideas? How do we keep the end in mind? Not just for your staff team, but where is the end in mind for you as a person?
Absolutely.
That's a big question, right?
Absolutely.
For you as a leader, for you as a husband, for you as a teacher, for you as a pastor, whatever role that you have, where is the end in mind for you, and how do you get it all done? You see somebody like Reggie, I mean, he seems like he's spinning about 40 plates at any given time. So what are the strategies he puts in place to keep this principle alive? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about next. We're going to hear from Kerry Newhoff, a man who juggles a whole bunch of stuff and does it so efficiently, so effectively, and he's going to share some of the principles that help keep him aligned every single day. Take it away, Kerry. Well, happy new year, everyone. It's so great to be here for the start of 2018 and joining us in the most unusual version of the Think Orange Bunker I think I've ever seen, right? This is ridiculous. We have Mr. Kerry Newhoff. Kerry, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Dave?
I'm fantastic. And Ashley obviously is here as well.
Glad it's 2018.
Now we're glad too.
Yes,
glad we made it.
Glad we made it. Kerry,
you can't just throw out the whole bunker thing and not tell them where we are.
Our loyal listeners know what the bunker is, but we are currently in Dallas, and we've set up a little temporary podcast bunker in, what would you call this? A nursery?
You said bunker.
Did
good
I?
Good job.
It's in a, it's a nursery, right?
It's a nursery. There are cribs and playpens
and nursing chairs. And literally there are
what do you even call those things? What are those, Kevin?
That's the lazy crib. That's where you don't
the lazy crib.
You're too lazy. You just put your,
you just put your kid in it and it just does it itself. But there are potties.
There are things in here that men don't understand. I don't
dude,
know
there are potties on the floor.
Hey,
down
I don't
here.
Understand it and I'm a woman.
Potties
so
on
I
the
don't
floor.
There are potties on the floor. Which sounds like a song. Like it's
potties and potty on the floor.
There's a potty on the floor.
It's the day after New Year's. There was a potty on the floor a couple days ago.
That's right. Amazing. Kerry, yeah. What's your
thank
favorite?
You.
What did you do for New Year's? What's your favorite New Year's song?
Oh, I probably, because we're recording this in advance,
yeah.
Right? So what did I do for New Year's? I can't lie. I don't think we have any specific plans, and every year it seems to get smaller. I'm not like one of those people who goes to Times Square and stands around with
I would
a million
never
other
do
people.
That.
Wouldn't you? I would never. Would you do that?
No.
Only if there was a potty on
I
the floor.
I look at those people, they're frozen.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's no potty
there's
on
no
the spot.
Potty on
it's
the
like, where do you go to the bathroom?
You have
that's
to get out
asking.
Of the crush of people.
Everything
it's just,
is a lot of work.
It is not good. It
you're
is,
hungry, you're tired, you have to use the bathroom, and you stand totally. There with a million people. It takes you until 4 a.m. to get home.
And you count for a ball to drop.
I know.
Ridiculous. Okay,
okay
wow. favorite New Year's song.
New Year's song?
Yeah.
You know what? I do actually usually listen to New Year's Day by U2.
How
like since I was a teenager when
I
that came out.
I don't know you two.
How does that
you
one go?
You don't know you two because no. You're way too young.
Yeah. Well, yeah. How's it go?
Oh, here we are. All is quiet on New Year's Day. There.
Woo, there it is.
I did it. I did it.
First
sang.
Singer on the podcast
all
for
right,
2018.
You got me.
It's so good. So good. Hey, so it's the start of a new year. We are talking about increasing your capacity as a leader, which is,
yes.
Kerry, why you're here. Because you are like the guru of all things leadership capacity and high impact leaders and things like that. So we want to really pick your brain on how we can be better leaders in 2018. Are you ready for this?
You can pick whatever's left. You may have it.
So, Kerry, my first question out of the gate would be, how do you increase your personal capacity? I know that that's a huge question, but I know that this is something that you think about a lot and you talk with a lot of high-level leaders about.
Yeah, well, let's start with one way not to do it.
Okay.
Or one way that brings diminishing results. Because I just tried it for so long and eventually you have to tap out. So one way that is going to bring you diminishing returns is time management.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all try to become more efficient. Mm-hmm. So you want to get, you know, apps that make you more efficient, or you're like, okay, I can make this meeting more efficient or whatever. But the challenge a lot of us have is life always gets more complicated. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with leadership, and even with life, things always more ends up on your plate as a leader. So you end up with more people in your church or more people in your company or more people in your organization. All of a sudden, it's like, now I got to squeeze this all into 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You have two kids, you know, and then all of a sudden you have three kids or four kids. And it's like, this is just more complicated than it was when I was single or when we were married with no kids or now there's more. And that seems to be the challenge. And we think, well, I'll just become more efficient. But being efficient doesn't make you more effective necessarily. And the problem with time management is time is a fixed commodity. You only get 24 hours a day. The only exception to that is the day you're born, day you die. Other than that, you know, you think about it. If you're elected president of the United States, and I'd like you to announce your candidacy at some point, both of you.
Well, I can't.
Oh, you can't, right? You're Australian.
You
can
do
that's
our
right.
Whole campaign.
That's right. You can do it.
Through
Ashley.
The Think Orange podcast.
You could do it.
Ashley, we're all behind you.
Am I the only one eligible here?
Well, yes. I'm a Canadian. I can't.
And I'm Australian.
My wife's eligible.
I'm so
she's
proud
an American.
To be American right now.
She is. She
proud
is. And Kevin's quiet
because
he's producing.
Hey, I'm with her.
Kevin's eligible. No, he's not. He's too young. And you're probably too young, too. So none of us can run for president.
35?
35. You have to be 35.
We're derailing here. We're derailing.
I'm way too young. Thank you.
Okay, if you became president of the United States, they don't give you 24 extra hours a day.
Mm.
Like, you have to do that in the same amount of time as somebody who doesn't have a job or somebody, you know, who has no kids or whatever. So that brings you diminishing results. So as I started to think that through, because as our church was growing and I was responsible for more and more, I started running out of time. And 12 years ago, I burned out. I just hit a wall. And I went into burnout and it was a horrible experience. Mm. And on the other side of burnout, I had to think, okay, how do I manage more and not kill myself, kill my family, kill our church. And so I started to think, okay, time management, you can become more efficient, but I have to become more effective. I have to go beyond that. So I stopped just managing time and I started managing energy and priorities. And that became, to answer your question, the linchpin for me. Energy and priorities. Because if you think about it, I mean, this is January 2nd, okay? Or it's the first week in the new year. Everybody's slash tired from the holidays, but really excited. We got all these great ambitions. But we all know that even though we get 24 equal hours in a day, all hours are not created equal. So quick question, who's a morning person here around
me.
The table?
Me.
You are. Yeah, I saw you at breakfast this morning. You were like, whoa, I'm ready to go, right? That's true. Dave, how about you? Are you a morning person?
I'm definitely a morning person.
Yeah, and I'm a morning
person.
Except
for this morning, I think.
No, I'm a morning.
You were also sitting at that table and you were very quiet.
Yeah, but I'm a morning person in that. That's my most efficient time use.
Yes, me too. And I learned that. Now, if you try to do, say, a writing project at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, how's it going to go as opposed to 7 p.m.?
Between 2 and 5 p.m.?
I know.
I am dead.
I'm the same way. I could go back to the hotel for a nap.
Yeah.
Like, I really could. And then in the evening, I'm sort of okay. And that's reality for everybody. Now, some listeners are going to be night owls. Some people are midday people. You know, hey, between 10 and 2, I'm on fire.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. But the point is, you have high energy zones, medium energy zones, and low energy zones. And that's true no matter how much sleep you get. The third thing is priorities. And we can get into that. But basically, the problem is every time somebody emails you, every time someone texts you, every time somebody calls you, they are asking you to accomplish their priorities, not yours. Nobody is ever going to ask you to accomplish your priorities. They're only going to ask you to accomplish theirs.
Yeah.
So it is by putting together time, energy, and priorities that you really start to leverage a higher impact.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, I want to circle around the idea of priorities because I know one of the things that has been so critical in your own leadership, and I've seen you actually do this. You know how to say no nicely.
That's my assistant, Sarah. She taught me.
I don't think it's because you're Canadian. This is a strategy that you have, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
So Canadians are nice.
So think about it. People still have their New Year's list, right? And 92%, we know that 92% of all New Year's resolutions fail. That's a complicated subject. You should look at John Acuff's book, Finish, to try to figure that out. It's an excellent book. But one of the problems is, you know, you go back to work and all of a sudden there's 452 things to do.
Yeah.
And your idea to train for a marathon or your idea that I'm going to go to the gym every day just kind of dies a silent death. Mm. So on priorities, what you have to do is you have to say no. Because when you say no to something, you're saying yes to something else. If you say no to the extra project, you're saying yes to your kids or dinner at home. If you say no to a meeting you don't really need to be at, then you're actually saying yes to, hey, I'm going to work on that writing project, or I'm going to record that podcast, or I'm going to write that book, or I'm going to launch that thing. So how do you say no nicely? You know, and again, my assistant, longtime assistant, Sarah Piercy, taught me this because she is so nice. And I basically joke that I pay her to say no, because that's what she does. She just spends all her time every week going, thank you. And you know how she starts and how we start? We say, we'd love to.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that podcast. Because reality is, and don't say it if you're lying, but for the most part, we'd love to do most of the opportunities that come along. I have to say no to most speaking opportunities just because I have a certain amount of you know, slots in the year that I'm say these are for speaking.
Yeah.
And about 70 to 80% of the requests don't fit in. And so we have to say no. And so always start with, I'd love to. I'd love to get together for breakfast. I'd love to have dinner. I'd love to. However, and then, you know, you've already affirmed them. You let them know. Doesn't look like I'm able to do that, or it's going to be a couple of weeks to get on the calendar. There's a few things you can do. Number one, if you're in a public setting, you can say, hey, can you email me? Dave, I know you want to get together, but can you just shoot me a quick email? Do you know the majority of people never email you?
Yeah.
If it's really important, they will.
Yeah.
But the majority of people don't. And then always keep a couple of slots. This is what I teach in the High Impact Leader course I do. Always keep a couple of slots open. So I have breakfast slots Tuesday and Thursday. And if I really need to meet with you and you really need to meet with me, we can fit in one of those slots. Yeah. Now, it won't be on a Saturday when I'm home with my family. It won't be on date night that I've already set aside for my wife. It may not be during message writing time, which is really important for me. But I can say, you know what? We can have breakfast. And then, you know, my assistant would usually take care of that. And it's like, well, how's, you know, we could do the second Tuesday in February. How does that work for you?
Yeah.
It doesn't work? How about the third Thursday? You know? And then you eventually get the people you need to get on your calendar. Or, of course, if it's a priority, you can drop what you're doing. But that's how most people end up going down in flames, is everything's a priority. Yeah. Everything's urgent. And Monday's over. And you were busy, but you didn't accomplish anything that was on your priority list.
Yeah. I know exactly.
So that's why you have to learn how to say no nicely.
I really like the two practical things you said there. First one is to start with, I'd love to, to affirm that request.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you said something that I know in my time in ministry was one of the lessons I had to learn really quickly. I'm sure for everybody who's listening, who's in children's ministry and student ministry, it's on Sundays when people are coming up to you and saying, hey, I need coffee. Hey, I need to meet with you. Hey, we need to talk about this issue. You want to say yes, but that little tip that you just put in was something that I learned really quick. That is such a priority. Why don't you email me to set up a time?
Yeah, and
that never happens.
The other thing that happens, this is tough. We have a lot of church leaders listening and we have a lot of business leaders listening. You eventually develop a reputation. And so this took a few years. You know, our church wasn't always the size it is today. It's a larger church. But, you know, when it was 600 or 800 people, it was pretty easy to think, oh, I can just get together whenever I want. And that's when I started to say no more regularly, because I realized I've got to prioritize the staff and the elders and the whole deal. Almost nobody at our church ever asked me to get together anymore. To the point where I'm kind of like, I got some time, right? Like, but you train people and they know that, listen, we love being part of our church, but that's not how we do care.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm always available at the front. Another technique is, if you're at the front and somebody says, hey, can you have breakfast? You can say, tell me what's on your mind. You wouldn't believe how many times you can solve that in 3 minutes.
Right there, yeah.
Right there.
Dude, that's so good.
And you go, well, you want to get together? Okay, tell me what's on your mind, Dave. Well, you know what? I've always wondered, if God is so good, why is there evil?
Yeah.
Well, a breakfast is not going to solve that one. Yeah. Okay, they've been trying to solve that one for like 1,000 years, so breakfast isn't going to solve that. But if I spend 5 minutes listening to you, and I give you a good answer, I send you to a website or a book or whatever, you know, hey, have you ever read this book? Or, you know, have you ever thought about it this way? And then you're like, wow, that was really helpful. Hey, can I pray with you, Dave? And just sincerely pray with the person. They don't need breakfast anymore.
That's great.
Hey, I'd like to go back to something you mentioned. You said that you were transitioning from, rather than managing time, you started managing your priorities and your energy.
Yeah.
Can you unpack that a little bit more for us?
Sure. So the secret to me, or what's probably gotten me more mileage than anything else, is this simple principle that high impact leaders do what they're best at when they're at their best. Mm. And I know that kind of sounds really cutesy, or, you know, it almost rhymes.
Sounds great. It sounds tweetable.
Yeah. You know what it is? What's behind that is, so we're all morning people, right? You think about a typical morning. And the reason I love morning, it's like beating rush hour. At 4:30 in the morning in your city, there's no traffic, right? So you can get from A to B in the minimum amount of time. If it's, you know, 30 miles, it might take you 30 minutes. That's it. You go at rush hour, and it can take you 90 minutes to do a 30-minute trip. Mm-hmm. We all know that. Yep. We all live in cities that, you know, have that problem. So I think life is like that. So I love starting early, because guess what? At 5:30 in the morning, nobody's texting me. Yep. Nobody's emailing me. A couple of things you can do. Shut off all notifications on your phone. And then in that optimal window, whatever that is. So for me, it's about 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. At my absolute best. That's when I should do the work that produces the highest value. So for me, I'm a writer, I'm an author, you know, and I write at my church and I speak at my church. So that's when I'm writing sermon series. That's when I'm writing books. That's when I'm writing blog posts. An interview, I can do a little bit later.
Yeah.
I can do that in the afternoon. It doesn't require my best. It takes me real focus to write the questions for the interview. So I'll write the questions to the interview in that peak zone. But you'll discover, if people are like, I don't know when my peak energy is, do this. Try to tackle your inbox, okay? Because you'll find out pretty quickly. And you know, if you're in your peak zone, you got 50 emails you need to plow through, you can do it in 20 minutes. Mm. There are other times where you got 5 emails and it takes you an hour.
Uh-huh.
We've all been there. So what you do, I wouldn't do email. I wouldn't do any of that other stuff. What I would do when I'm at my peak zone is do the things that deliver the highest value to my mission and to the mission of our organization. So in my case these days, that's teaching really well and creating great sermon series. It's creating great content for leaders. It's writing courses. It's actually, if I can film in the morning, I'll film in the morning because I'm best and my mind is sharpest if I have to film something. And then later in the afternoon when my energy's lower, well, I can do expense reports, you know, because I have people who check it to make sure it's accurate. I can do email because a lot of it is, you know, oh, thanks, or you punt it somewhere or whatever. And so it's doing what you're best at when you're at your best. Because Right. Here's the alternative to that, Ashley. The alternative is chances are you're best at something because you're gifted in it. Mm-hmm. What most of us do is we cheat our gift. And we cheat our gift because I'm a writer, I'm a speaker. I can probably put together a message outline at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and it'll still be okay. Mm-hmm. And it'll be fine and nobody will leave the church and nobody, you know, but it won't be great. It won't be my best work. Mm-hmm. But if I move that writing time into my peak zone first thing in the morning, I'm going to deliver a better product and I'm going to set time aside to develop my gift. So what happens, because you can pull something off, you could even wing it. Some of our listeners could wing it. It's like, I'm just going to wing it. Okay, you can wing it. You'll cheat your gift because you'll use your gift, but you'll never develop it.
Ooh.
If you go to that window where you're spending 3 to 4 hours writing that message 4 or 5 days in a week, all of a sudden you're going to be like, I got time to look at the commentary. Mm-hmm. Hey, I can do some research. You know what? That paragraph isn't quite right. I'm going to rethink it. I'm going to brainstorm title on this for like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, or I'm going to loop in friends and I'm going to get their feedback on this. And then you'll develop your gift. And it's really, if you think about it, it's like seeing, you know, a top golfer do the same putt 100 times on the practice green. Now, they're going to sink it more than any of us, but they're developing their gift. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why pro athletes, that's why, you know, they'll use their peak time in the gym. It's not just, oh, I'm, you know, you think of baseball 40 years ago, it was guys with big beer guts walking around. Now it's like a pretty, you know, pretty honed athleticism.
Right.
And these guys are working out so that they can compete in the World Series. Mm. So I think you should develop your gift. And I think that happens when you take, when you do what you're best at. When you're at your best.
So, Carrie, what would you say to the leaders listening who maybe their peak time, like you, is also 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., but the thing that they're best at or the thing they're most responsible for happens between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m.?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people will say, I don't have any control over my work. But you think about it. Okay, so let's just say worst case scenario, they're in a middle management job. They have no discretion. They have to do it. Well, try to front load your meetings to the extent you can. Mm-hmm. Most people, if you're working 40, 45 hours a week, you have more control than you admit. All right. I doubt for a lot of people who work in offices that more than 20 of those hours are prescribed by someone else. Like, I know very few people who are spending 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, in wall-to-wall meetings. Mm-hmm. It's like it starts at 9, it ends at 4 every day, rinse, lather, repeat. Most of us have a little more free time than that. But even if you don't, you know, 40 hours a week, well, there's 128 other hours in the week that you have total control over. You can control when you go to bed, when you wake up. Mm-hmm. You have total control over what's a social night, what's a date night. You have total control over that side project you've got going. You could work on a project at 6 a.m. if you wanted to, or at 10 p.m. if you wanted to. So I would focus on what you can control, okay. Number one. And secondly, what I would do is front-end load that high-value work, figure out when your mid to low-energy zones are, and just shuffle the deck. And we've had people who've gone through the high-impact leader training, and they've reorganized their entire team schedule. Like, they've reorganized, we're not going to do leadership team at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday because you guys are zoned out. Or we're not doing it, you know, Wednesday at 3 o'clock because no one's paying attention. Or we've stopped doing meetings on Friday because everybody's only thinking weekend.
Right.
And nobody brings their best. Or we're not doing meetings on Monday morning because people are trying to scramble and figure this out. And we've had whole teams, like, almost do a biorhythmic chart of everybody in their leadership structure and then say, okay, we got these 2 or 3 windows where we need to do our highest value work, and they've seen huge returns. So to the extent that you can control that, control that.
Good. Thank you.
Hey, so we've talked a lot about what happens inside a work environment, stuff like that. I want to know from your experience. What about outside? What about personal time? How are you maximizing your energy away from work, away from hustle?
Yeah, you know, that's, I love that question, Dave. And sort of the way I think about this training is it's get your life and your leadership yep. back. Because what happens is when you don't organize work well, your life disappears. And that's when you're working on your message on a Saturday when you should be playing with your kids. That's when date night's like, I don't have time, honey. I got no time this week. Sorry. Mm. You know, we'll do it next week, which never happens, yeah. right? So one of the keys to that for me is I moved a number of years ago to what I call a fixed calendar. And I've already got most of 2018 planned out.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's planned out. And it was planned out in 2016.
Dave, you think we're on his calendar in 2018? What are the chances?
No, there are slots.
He's going to ask me now, hey, what's on your mind?
But I basically do the same week every week when I'm at home. And it's like Saturday's a day off, Sunday afternoon after church is rest, and we, you know, sometimes do some social activities. Rarely socialize on a Saturday night when I'm preaching. Date night is Friday night. You know, the evenings, I might have a couple of meetings a month. Yeah. From the church, and then exercise is usually slotted in the mid-afternoon, late afternoon. Monday, Wednesday, Friday are no meeting zones, and in the morning I do creative work. There are slots where I do my podcast interviews, and that's kind of all predetermined.
Yeah.
And as long as that rhythm is working, we'll probably revisit it a couple times during the year, but we already know, and that makes it very predictable, because I have a couple of assistants, and they're putting things into my calendar, but they know that Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the morning is a no-fly zone.
Yeah.
That's when I do my best work. That's when I'm writing books, sermons, you know, so on. And they need to ask me permission to book something in that space. Now, sometimes I'll give it if it's a really big priority. But that's how I do my personal life. Is date night's already on the calendar 52 times.
Yeah.
Vacation is already planned out for the year. And it's in there, so it's a no-fly zone. Because I used to live in the, oh, I wonder what time I have left for vacation. Oh, surprise, surprise, nothing. Right? Because everything got too busy. So you put, it's that old, it's a variation of that story of you put the big rocks in first because vacation's really important. So I know in May of this year, we're spending most of the month in Australia, something very close to your heart.
Yes.
I know.
Do you need a chaperone or a translator?
Yes, personal tour guide.
Do you need a translator?
We need a translator, Dave, absolutely.
From Canadian to Australian.
Yeah.
That's all.
I think I should help.
No.
Yeah, yeah, Ashley wants to help too. So, you know, it's that thing where we've already decided. We've got a week in July that we've already put aside. I've got Orange tour dates. And actually, we've got a book coming out. I've got a book coming out this fall.
Mm.
We've said no to almost all speaking engagements in the fall because my agent already told me, and the book publisher always told me, save the fall for the book release. Now, I don't know what's happening, but I know I've got an open calendar.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, so I have to be honest here. For me, the thought of having like all of 2018 already planned out like makes me freak out inside.
Sure,
like,
sure.
I don't know how I feel about like that commitment of that and the routine of it. So what would you say to me?
Okay, so Ashley, what's your favorite day off? Like just to relax, let your hair down, have some fun with friends. Like, is it Saturday? Is it Sunday? Is it Friday night? What is it?
Probably Saturday, because no one else really is off Friday.
Okay, so Saturday. All right. So right now, if you looked at March of 2018, what's in your calendar for Saturdays?
I have no idea.
Nothing, right? Probably nothing?
Probably nothing.
All right, so I'm going to be that guy who comes up to you. You don't really want to hang out with me, all right? Yeah. But I go to your church, and I'm like, so Ashley, what are you doing on Saturday?
This coming Saturday?
Yeah. What are you doing?
I don't know.
Oh, great. Because I got this idea. Listen, this is what we're going to do. All right. I want you to come over. I want you to hang out. And I got a party. You coming?
No.
Oh, you're going to go into that awkward space, are you?
I'd love to.
Oh,
however.
Listen, that dialogue sunk my ship over and over again because my life is filled with really well-meaning individuals who are like, what are you doing Saturday? Nothing. Great. In the back of my mind, it's family. In the back of my mind is when my boys were younger, they're in their 20s now, but I'm playing with my kids. I'm cutting the grass. You know, I'm washing my car. I got these things I want to do. I just want to relax in my backyard. And as soon as you say nothing, you're kind of trapped. And I might say, good, you can help me move. right? That's
exercise
the evil
with
friend.
Purpose. Wow. Perfect.
But that's how we all get sunk. So here's what you do. It's not that's like good. I didn't sit down and do 365 entries. I did 7 and I set them to repeat. Hmm. So every Saturday it says family.
So do you just do that to have something to say? Or like, yeah. How often do you actually stick to the schedule?
More often than not.
Okay.
I'm not doing events. Now, I'm a writer, so the problem is, truthfully, sometimes, you know, that stuff leaks out into the free margin, but it's always negotiated. I'm always saying to my wife, who's a lawyer, hey, do you have anything to do Saturday? What do you want to do Saturday? Like, I'm, you know, we're recording this in, what, October? I'm flying back, and we've already made a decision. We don't have any social things on, so we're going to go shopping for some furniture when mm-hmm. I get back. But I have said no to a lot of other things to make that happen.
Right.
So here's what you do. Next time we have that conversation, I say, Ashley, what are you doing on Saturday?
I'm hanging out with my friends.
You say, you know what? You pull out your phone. You go, I've got a commitment.
Oh.
That's it.
Mm. That's
you
big.
Don't have to tell anybody like what it is. You don't have to tell anyone what it is. You know, Kevin, our producer, it could say Arden in it.
Yeah.
True.
Right? Yeah. His daughter. And that's it. That's what it says. It says family. And they're like, you know what? Oh, well, what are you doing? You know, I've made a commitment to spend the day with my family. Oh, okay. Most healthy people respect that.
Yeah.
And they get it. Or, hey, Friday night's date night. Or, you know what? I'm at the gym with a friend. Or, this is what I'm doing. And most of the time when there's nothing there, you say, I'm doing nothing.
Yeah.
And so a fixed calendar can really be a help with that. And then honestly, if you think it's something you want to do, then you just say, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, I had something I was going to do. You text your spouse or whatever, or whoever you're going to hang out with, or if you were doing it solo
mm-hmm.
and you're like, I don't really need the day off. I think I'm in.
Yeah.
But it gives you freedom and it gives you control over your calendar rather than letting everyone else set your priorities for you.
You're out in
Coach
front of
Carrie.
You're out in front of it instead of playing catch up the whole time, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you've already decided.
Yeah.
And you know what That's we so did good. Because I traveled more last year than I did any other time in my life. My wife said, we don't have much of a social life. So we actually blocked in social days. Mm. Where it was just, we don't know who we're inviting over, but we're inviting people over. And, you know, we know that Friday night is going to be time with friends. And then you get to fill in the slots about which friends can make it on which days.
Carrie, this has been absolutely phenomenal. So helpful for me. Talk to us about the high impact leadership stuff you've got going on at the moment.
Yeah, sure. So it became the number one question I got asked a couple years ago. People are like, how do you get it all done and like not get divorced? Like, how does that happen? And I just kept answering it ad hoc. And then I realized, you know, that's the number one thing people are asking me because I was leading a church full time. I was writing, blogging, podcasting, you know, authoring books, the whole deal. And yeah, my kids are a little bit older, but that doesn't explain it. I run into retired people who are like, I'm so busy. I was busier than when I worked. I'm like, how can that be? But, you know, that's what I hear.
<With what>?
Yeah.
So I started to write down the principles and to reflect on it because this is my life post-burnout. And this year I'm 12 years on the other side of burnout.
Mm.
And I haven't burned out in 12 years. So I can't say it's bulletproof. But I can promise you it's been extremely life-giving. And we've had a couple thousand, I think almost 3,000 people have done the High Impact Leader training so far over the last year. And I love getting stories about people who are like, I've got my family back, or my day off is actually a day off, or I become so much more effective, or I'm not writing Saturday night sermons anymore, or I'm reading my kids' bedtime stories and putting them to bed. So it's really exciting. So I put that together in a course called the High Impact Leader course. And it's not usually available, but it's available right now at thehighimpactleader.com. So if you just go to thehighimpactleader.com, you can get in on the course. And the goal is to help you get your life and leadership back.
That's great. Carrie, thank you so much. It's so
can
incredible.
Can I ask one more thing before you go?
Yeah, of course sure. You can.
Okay.
I have time in my calendar for you to ask me a question.
go ahead,
Ashley.
Carrie, a few times you mentioned when you got on the other side of burnout, this is when you made the change.
Yeah.
For any of our listeners who are currently living in that burnout right now, what would you say to them?
I would say, number one, get help. Don't make last year like this year. And this is partly the reconstructive path. I knew it took me years to figure out the rhythms and the patterns that would work sustainably. Mm. What I knew is I needed... I you know, when you're burning out, you just want to get back to normal. I just want to get back to normal.
Right.
The problem with normal is it got you to where you are. So you need a new normal. And I realized I needed a new normal, that if I just went back to my old pattern, even when I got healthy, I'd end up in the ditch again. So I would say you got to, first of all, get help. Tell somebody if you haven't told somebody. Go see your doctor. Go see a counselor. There's usually some emotional issues or spiritual issues under that that you need to get dealt with. And I had my share of those that I got dealt with. And then on the other side, you just got to find a new normal. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, this doesn't say, the course doesn't say you have to be a morning person. If you're a night owl, that's awesome. I'm not, but you just, how do you leverage your personality and get time, energy, and priorities working in your favor? But the biggest thing is call an audible, go get some help. Mm. And on the other side, recreate a new normal. And if you just search my blog, it's just carrienewhoff.com, or you can go to leadlikenever before.com and search in the search window burnout. I've written a lot of free articles that can help with that too. And there's some good resources out there, but don't go through it alone. It'll take you under.
Yeah, Thank you. That's awesome. Carrie, we will make sure that all of the links and all the information is in our show notes so people can just scroll down and have a look at that. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Ashley.
I have learned so much today.
Me too. Yeah, this was so
you're incredible. Thank you so much, Kerry. You're awesome.
Great. I'd love to hang out again, but I know you guys are busy. So maybe we'll do this in the future.
I would love to, but.
I would love to, but we've got a tight schedule in 2018.
Thanks, guys.
Well, man, I absolutely love that interview with Kerry. There were so many practical steps that if you could see my notes right now, I've got notes everywhere. There's stuff highlighted because he shared so many great principles that I've already started to implement into my life. We did this interview a couple of weeks ago, so I've been able to sit with this. But Kevin, I'd love to know what you thought. For me, the thing that stood out most was when he said, high impact leaders do what they're best at when they're at their best.
You know what? That sounds so simple and it sounds so beautiful and eloquent, but is that convicting or what?
And it takes some soul searching to figure this out. When are you really at your best and what should you be doing at those times? I'd love to know what it is for you. For me, I know that I'm at my best first thing in the morning. Like my alarm goes off at 4:50 a.m., which sounds ridiculous, but it goes off then and I spend a couple of minutes just sort of waking up, reading the news, checking Twitter and stuff like that. Then I go downstairs and I have 19 minutes to myself, where I have nobody interrupting me with texts, nobody interrupting me with emails, no social media going off, and I get most of my day's work in that 90 minutes.
Man, I love that. I too wake up early, usually get them around 5 a.m. By around 5:15, I'm locked in, focused on something I'm trying to get done for that day. But before 7 a.m., before 7:30, I usually get my most critical assignment done first thing in the morning, like that, when I'm locked in, focused, fresh, and there are no distractions.
Yeah. And it requires so much honesty, personal honesty, just looking in the mirror and saying, when am I best? Like, I love that Kerry talked about that, how he front loads meetings to the day because he knows that he gets worn out a little bit later on. And I love that line that he said, implementing all of this sort of stuff, calendaring and all that sort of thing, you get your life and your leadership back.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I loved about the concept is really the idea of energy management.
Yes.
You know, I think as a leader, and I think especially as a parent, a spouse, I think when you're trying to get work done at work, you come home and you've done your part, hopefully to maybe lock in and get your work done during the work hours, but you're just drained.
Yeah.
And you come home and you're looking at your kids and your wife or your spouse and you're saying, oh my gosh, like I have nothing left to give you all. And I worked so hard at work so I could leave things at work to be with you all. Like I work. And so how do you manage your energy matters a lot too. And I think that's something I'm still working quite a bit on. And the other thing is also just the prioritization perspective, saying everything on my plate shouldn't be on it.
Yeah.
And I've got to own that. And I have to own that there's someone else who should be doing some of this.
Yeah.
And I have to figure out a way to engage them and get that off my plate.
Yeah, that's so good. Kevin, I'm going to keep asking you from now on, every couple of weeks, what your peak times are. We should keep each other accountable to that.
I love that.
And we would love to hear from you as well. If you know when your peak times are, like what is that section of your day where you get the most done, where you are most efficient, most effective? We would love to hear from you. You can follow us on social media. You can check mine out at Aussie Dave, A-U-S-S-I-E Dave. That's pretty much Twitter, Instagram, everything.
Yeah.
And Kevin?
Well, I'm the same everywhere, but mine is not half as memorable, unfortunately. as a marketer, I'm pretty embarrassed by that. But my name, Kevin Jennings, is just taken everywhere. I'm the second. For those who don't know, I'm a junior.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm a junior. I'm a second.
Wow. Can I call you junior from now on?
No. because no one calls me junior. My parents named me Kevin Benjamin Jennings the second. Because they didn't because they didn't want me called junior my whole life.
And this is the setup for your Twitter handle.
It is all that. I got to do a pitch for my Twitter. No, it's just KBJ NO2, like the number two pencil.
Oh, nice.
NO2.
Nice. I like
KBJ, that. NO2, number two.
Mine was a little bit easier. Aussie, because I'm Australian.
Yep, that's it.
Dave, because that's my name.
I mean, that's my name too, is the initials.
Well, we want to hear your stories. And you can also check out a little bit more of this episode just by checking out our show notes. All you need to do is to thinkorangepodcast.com. You can get all the show notes there. And as always, we would love if you could leave us a review on iTunes. We would love if you could subscribe on whatever podcast network you are listening to right now. And we would also love it if you could share this content with a friend. You know, we work hard to bring you conversations about leadership and principles and strategies and systems that you can implement in your church ministry life, but also in your home life as well, whether you're a dad or a mom or a husband or a sister or a wife or whatever capacity you're in. We want to help you in everyday life come up with the best possible system so that you can be a high impact leader. So make sure you share this with a friend. The best way to do that, go to those show notes. There's plenty of tweetable content there, and we've already laid it all out for you. We've also got discussion questions there. If you'd like to discuss some of these principles, these ideas, these strategies with your team, make sure you check out the show notes because there's some discussion questions in there as well.
Yeah, especially on an episode like this one. I mean, there were a couple of times during the interview where Ashley just directly looked at Carrie and said, how do I do this with when I'm, you know, in the middle of the organization, right? Yeah. People beneath me that count on me, people above me who are counting on me. This is a different kind of conversation to say, I'm going to change how I manage my time and expect everyone else to get on board.
So discuss this with your team, share it with a friend, leave us a review, do all that sort of stuff. Subscribe if you haven't done so already. We will see you next week for an absolutely amazing episode 39 of the Think Orange podcast. But between now and then, when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.